Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Death Not Yet, a You Should Be Here Podcasters Give Back series. Each episode focuses on an individual whose story exemplifies perseverance, bravery, and survival. Like a phoenix rising up from the ashes, these individuals in these cases today will inspire and encourage you to keep going. Death Not Yet is a collaborative effort from true crime podcasters who aim to focus on victims and give back to the community. Every penny donated will go back to an organization helping surviving victims of crimes navigate through their forever changed lives. To donate, please go to buymeacoffee.com/youshouldbehere. Hey guys, my name is Jamie Beebe, and I'm the host of The Last Trip and Strictly Stalking. I'm really excited to bring you this week's episode. Do you love true crime and travel? So do I. I've spent the last few years traveling the world, chasing sunsets, walking unfamiliar streets, and breathing in the thrill of somewhere new. But along the way, I started wondering, what about the people who booked the same trips I did and never made it home? I'm Jamie Beebe, true crime investigator, traveler, co-host of Strictly Stalking, and now host of The Last Trip. Each week, I dive into the stories of people who are living their best lives, on vacation, chasing joy, celebrating milestones, when something went horribly wrong. From solo hikers who vanish without a trace to romantic getaways that end in murder, The Last Trip explores the intersection of wanderlust and danger, beauty and brutality. You'll hear what led up to their final days, the hard facts of the investigation, and the haunting mysteries that still linger. What really happened? What went overlooked? Could it have been prevented? Kiara Henry was exploring Maui alone, taking in the island's lush beauty. Then, one day she vanished. Her rental car was found in a park. Nothing was out of place. No suspects, no answers. Just questions. Was it an accident, a calculated abduction, or did she choose to disappear? Then there's Elijah Snow, celebrating his 10-year wedding anniversary in Cancun. He said goodnight to his wife, and just minutes later, he was gone. By morning, he was found dead, wedged in a hotel window across the street. Beaten, bruised, Mexican officials called it an accident. His family calls it murder. What really happened that night in paradise? In every episode, I take you beyond the headlines, into the real stories behind the final journeys people never expected would be their last. We'll talk about how to travel safer, how to recognize red flags, and whether knowing what we know now, you'd still want to take that same trip. Because danger doesn't take a vacation, and sometimes the getaway becomes the end of the road. Subscribe now to The Last Trip, where true crime meets travel, and every destination hides a darker story. Available wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on Instagram at The Last Trip Crime Pod. Sometimes the stories we tell here feel more like nightmares than real life. Stories of violence, of cruelty, of unimaginable control. But every once in a while, we come across a survivor whose strength redefines what it means to endure. In this episode, we're traveling back to 1977, to a quiet California highway where 20-year-old Colleen Stan made a simple, trusting choice to hitch a ride. What followed was a 7-year ordeal so disturbing, it shocked investigators, psychologists, and the public alike. She was held captive in a coffin-like box, controlled, isolated, manipulated. But this isn't just the story of what was done to her. It's about what she did next. Because Colleen Stan didn't just survive. She reclaimed her life. We'll unravel the case that came to define the darkest extremes of human captivity and explore how one woman found light, power, and purpose on the other side. Today, I'm sharing the story of Colleen Stan, a woman who began as a victim, survived the unimaginable, and emerged as a force.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
May 19th, 1977. It was a Thursday. Gas was 62 cents a gallon. Jimmy Carter had been president for just 4 months. Elvis Presley was still alive. And in just 6 days, Star Wars would premiere, changing cinema and pop culture forever. But none of that was on Colleen Stan's mind that morning. She was 20 years old, living in Eugene, Oregon, a haven for free thinkers, environmentalists, and the remnants of the counterculture movement. The 70s were winding down, but the idealism of the previous decade hadn't quite burned out. Hitchhiking was still seen as part of that freedom, especially for young people. If you were low on money and high on optimism, sticking your thumb out on the side of the road wasn't reckless, it was common. Hitchhiking was a kind of silent social contract. You trusted strangers, or at least pretended to. You got into their car, hoped for some decent music and conversation, and believed you'd get to your destination in one piece. That belief was starting to show cracks, though. Ted Bundy had already begun targeting women in the Pacific Northwest. Reports of missing hitchhikers, mostly young, mostly female, were appearing more frequently in the news. But for many, including Colleen, those headlines still felt distant. The danger wasn't here, not now, and not to me. Colleen shared a house with her friends, spent her time outdoors, loved poetry, and had an independent streak. That morning, she packed a small bag, left a note for her roommate, and walked out the front door with a plan. She was headed south, toward Westwood, California, for a friend's birthday party. It was a quiet logging town tucked near Lassen Volcanic National Park, surrounded by pine forests, two-lane roads, and not much else. It was over 400 miles away, a 7 to 8 hour drive if you were lucky. She had hitchhiked long distances before and considered herself street smart. She was cautious, even intuitive. In fact, that morning, she turned down two rides, one from a group of young men who made her uneasy, and another that just didn't quite feel right. Then, along a quiet stretch of Interstate 5, a small blue Dodge Colt pulled up. Inside was a young couple, a man and a woman, and a baby in the back seat. The picture of domestic normalcy. Now, that detail, the presence of a child, made Colleen's guard drop. Statistically speaking, women traveling with children weren't abductors. So she got in the car. The couple introduced themselves as Cameron and Janice Hooker. He was tall, quiet. She was polite, soft-spoken. They seemed normal, kind even. The car was clean, the baby was sleeping, and Colleen settled in for the last leg of her trip. The car hummed down the highway past anything familiar. Colleen sat in the back seat, watching the road, listening to the engine, probably imagining the party she'd soon be arriving at. She had no idea she was moving further and further from safety, that with every mile, she was getting closer to a prison designed not with bars, but with silence. What she didn't know was that Cameron Hooker had prepared for this day, that he'd built a box, not a metaphor, a literal box, padded, insulated, made to cover her head and cut off all sound, light, and breath. It was in the trunk, waiting. What happened next would remain hidden from the world for over 7 years. This was 1977, before cell phones, before GPS, before tracking devices, Find My Phone, or social media breadcrumbs. When you vanished, you vanished. And often, no one came looking until it was far too late. Colleen Stan would become one of the most extreme cases of prolonged captivity in modern American history. Her story would stretch the limits of belief, challenging how we think about control, obedience, and the will to survive. But this isn't a story about horror. It's a story about her, what was taken from her, what she endured, and what she ultimately reclaimed. Because Colleen didn't just survive, she transcended. But before we go further into what happened that day, before the box, before the isolation, before the unimaginable, it's important to understand who Colleen was. Because stories like this often begin with the trauma, the headline, the horror. But Colleen had a whole life before that ride. She was more than what was done to her. She was a daughter, a friend, a dreamer. And to truly grasp the strength of her survival, you have to know what kind of person she was before the darkness.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Colleen Stan was born on December 31st, 1956, in Riverside, California. She was the oldest of three girls in a working-class family. Her parents divorced when she was young, and like many children of the era, she learned early how to adapt, how to navigate between homes, keep the peace, and look after her younger siblings. From a young age, Colleen had a quiet strength. She was soft-spoken, but not timid. Her smile came easy, and people who knew her would later say she had a peacefulness about her, a kind of natural calm that made others feel safe in her presence. She wasn't flashy. She didn't chase attention. But there was something magnetic about her, an ease, a groundedness that people remembered. She loved poetry. She wrote in journals. She was deeply spiritual, though not in a preachy or dogmatic way, more of a quiet seeker. Someone who found beauty in small things, walks in the woods, good conversations, handwritten notes. She played guitar. She sang. In high school, she wasn't the loudest or the most popular, but she was well-liked. Teachers described her as conscientious, focused. Friends remembered her as loyal, the kind of person who didn't just listen to your problems, but remembered them, followed up, and sat with you in the hard stuff. Eugene, Oregon was the type of place that fit Colleen's free-spirited nature. Eugene in the late 70s was part college town, part hippie enclave, full of secondhand bookstores, herbal medicine shops, and a local music scene. She shared a small rental house with her friends. It wasn't fancy, but it was home. She worked occasional jobs and was in between big life decisions. Like a lot of young people in their early 20s, she was figuring it out as she went. She'd recently ended a serious relationship and was in a reflective space, not lost, but exploring. She talked often about wanting to go back to school, maybe write a book someday, maybe find a deeper purpose. She was that kind of person, thoughtful, introspective, full of quiet potential. Her roommate at the time, when later interviewed, described Colleen as innocent, but not naive. She believed in the good in people, but she also trusted her gut. That's why, on that May morning, she turned down two rides before saying yes to the third. She did have instincts. She was careful. She certainly wasn't reckless. She was just a young woman trying to live her life with openness, curiosity, and trust. She had no reason to believe that one small decision, accepting a ride from a smiling couple with a baby, would change everything. And that's what makes her story so haunting. She could have been any of us, a sister, a best friend, a daughter. Just a girl in her 20s on a road trip to see a friend. With plans, with dreams, with a whole life ahead of her. And in an instant, all of that, the freedom, the future, even her name, would be taken from her. But it wouldn't be taken forever. To understand what happened, to truly grasp the world Colleen was about to enter, we have to shift focus. Because evil doesn't always look like a monster. Sometimes it looks like a quiet man with a soft voice, a young mother with a baby in her arms, a small, ordinary home on a quiet street. Sometimes it looks exactly like the kind of people you'd trust. Cameron and Janice Hooker didn't appear dangerous, but behind closed doors, they were building a reality so twisted, so calculated, so chilling, it would eventually be called one of the most extreme cases of prolonged captivity in American history.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Before they became the couple who would imprison Colleen for more than 7 years, Cameron and Janice Hooker were almost invisible. Forget the boogeyman. Forget the shadowy figure lurking in an alley. This evil came dressed in the most unremarkable clothes. Cameron Hooker was born in California in 1953. He grew up in Alturas, a small town in the northern part of the state. It was rural, isolated, the kind of place where people minded their own business and expected you to do the same. Not much is known publicly about his early childhood. But what we do know is that Cameron had a deeply troubled inner world from a young age. He was developing violent sexual fantasies. Not the kinds that hinted at domination or control, but full-blown fantasies of kidnapping, torture, and sexual slavery. He reportedly became obsessed with bondage imagery in magazines, like Hustler and Bondage Life. By his mid-teens, this wasn't just a curiosity, it was a fixation. He began crafting makeshift devices, restraints, harnesses, and what would later become his trademark, soundproof, claustrophobic boxes designed to completely isolate a person from the outside world. There's no record of him ever getting therapy. There's no record of him ever getting caught. There's just a boy growing into a man consumed by control, secrecy, and domination, and doing a disturbingly good job of hiding it. Janice Hooker was born Janice Lashley. She was raised in a strict religious household, sheltered, conservative, and taught to submit to male authority. According to her own testimony, she was emotionally vulnerable and lacked experience with relationships when she met Cameron in the early 1970s. She was just 15. He was 19. It wasn't long before she became completely entangled in him. Their relationship began in the shadows. An imbalance of age, experience, and control. Cameron introduced bondage into their sex life almost immediately, and Janice, young and desperate for love, agreed to it. Over time, that willingness was exploited into total submission. Friends, if they noticed anything, chalked it up to Cameron being strict or intense. He was described as quiet, reserved, the kind of man who didn't talk much, but always seemed to be calculating something. Janice was seen as sweet, meek, soft-spoken. They married in 1975. Not long after, Cameron told Janice he needed more, that the bondage wasn't enough, that he wanted to kidnap a woman and keep her as a sex slave. He framed it as a kind of fantasy life they could build together, a solution to keep Janice from having to participate in sex acts he knew she wasn't comfortable with. And here's where Janice's story becomes especially complicated, because she agreed. She later claimed she was manipulated, that she believed Cameron when he said this arrangement would save their marriage. She also claims she was a victim of abuse herself, physically, psychologically, sexually, and that she was terrified of losing him. And so, disturbingly, she allowed it. The Hookers had their first daughter in 1976, a baby, in a home where Cameron Hooker was already designing custom boxes and soundproof chambers, reading about abductions and control, and planning to bring a woman into captivity. He wanted what he would later call a girl in a box, someone who could be broken, owned, erased. Cameron had no criminal record. He had no arrests. There were no outward signs to the outside world that anything was wrong. The couple rented a modest home in Red Bluff, California. Cameron worked at a lumber mill. Janice stayed home with the baby. They were friendly enough with neighbors, but not close. No one suspected what was happening behind those walls. By the spring of 1977, Cameron was done fantasizing. He was ready to act. They had prepared a plan. They had chosen the car. They had rehearsed what to say, how to look normal, how not to raise suspicion. And then, on May 19th, with their baby in the back seat, they drove out toward Highway 5 and waited for someone to trust them. Because the next person who stepped into their car would become their prisoner. And that person was Colleen Stan.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting in the car, Colleen was relaxed. She felt lucky. They were taking her most of the way. She even remembered feeling grateful. But then, little things began to shift. At one point, they stopped for gas. Colleen got out to use the bathroom. She later recalled something strange, a feeling in her gut, like something was off. She looked at the small window in the bathroom and debated, "Should I escape?" But she didn't have a clear reason. The couple hadn't done anything wrong. Not really. She shook it off, told herself not to be paranoid, and got back in the car. A little while later, Cameron said he knew a scenic back road they could take. Something pretty, more relaxed than the busy highway. Colleen agreed. The car turned off the interstate. The road got quieter, thinner. Trees closed in around them. Then Cameron pulled the car over near a logging area outside Red Bluff. It was remote. No traffic, no people, no houses. That's when everything changed. Colleen would later recall how Cameron got out of the car and opened the trunk. He pulled something out, a strange homemade device, heavy, wooden, a box. Not just any box. A box built to fit exactly over a human head, lined with carpet, designed to block out light, sound, air. He brought it to the back seat and in one terrifying moment pulled out a knife. The baby was still in the car. Janice watched silently, and Colleen, frozen in confusion, was held at knife point. Before she could scream or even ask why, the box came down over her head. She was in darkness, complete and total, hot, heavy, muffled. Her breath caught. The air inside was thick, stifling. She couldn't hear anything clearly, couldn't see, couldn't move. It was just fear. It was disorientation. That box wasn't meant to imprison. It was meant to erase her identity, to strip away time, space, reality. From that moment forward, Colleen was no longer a traveler on her way to a birthday party. She was a prisoner. Her captors? Well, they were just getting started. For the next 7 years, Colleen would exist in a world most of us couldn't begin to imagine. She wouldn't just be held. She would be controlled, manipulated, tortured, isolated. And somehow, she would survive it. After the abduction, Cameron and Janice took Colleen back to their home in Red Bluff, a modest beige house on a quiet residential street. From the outside, looked like any other home, but inside, it was a prison. The first night, Colleen was strung up by her wrists in the basement, naked, blindfolded, gagged, her toes barely touching the floor. She was left like that for hours, possibly longer. Time didn't work the same way in that space. She would lose track of minutes, days, sometimes entire months. Cameron referred to her only as the girl. He told her she had been chosen by a powerful underground organization he called the Company, a secret syndicate that bought and sold slaves, punished escape attempts, and would murder her and her family if she disobeyed. This wasn't just physical captivity. This was psychological warfare, and it worked. Pauline believed him. She was 20, isolated, in a strange town, with no way out. The fear was so complete, so carefully constructed that she gave in. Not because she was weak, but because she wanted to survive. And that's the thing we have to understand about Colleen. She chose survival. Every single day. Cameron kept her locked inside a coffin-like wooden box under the couple's bed for up to 23 hours a day. The box was only 8 feet long, 3 feet wide, and 2 feet high. No light, very little air. It was lined with insulation, designed to muffle any sound she made. Janice, Cameron's wife, slept just inches above her. And Colleen, she stayed silent, still breathing as little as possible, waiting. While in captivity, Colleen was subjected to various forms of torture, beatings, and rape. Cameron tortured her using starvation, electrocution, burning, and tying her wrists to the ceiling. In that box, she trained her mind, sang songs in her head, imagined conversations with her family. She created mental routines, exercises to keep from losing herself. In later interviews, she would say, "My mind was the only thing they couldn't take." When she was let out, sometimes for short periods, sometimes longer, she was forced to clean, cook, and care for the hookers and their children. Always under strict control, always under the threat of the Company, using coercive control and fear to keep her obedient. Cameron warned Colleen that if she ever screamed while he tortured her, he would cut out her vocal cords. He told her he'd done it before, and she believed him. There had been another young girl, another woman who had vanished before Colleen was taken. Her name was Marie Elizabeth Spinake. She was never found, but Colleen saw her every single day. Cameron kept a photo of Marie inside the space where he imprisoned Colleen, between the pedestal of the bed and the wooden box where she was locked away. There, in that narrow gap, he kept Colleen's purse and personal belongings, along with a photo of Marie. So every time Colleen crawled in or out of that box where she spent up to 23 hours a day, she saw Marie staring back at her. At the time, she didn't know who the woman in the photo was. It wasn't until after she escaped that she finally learned her name. Shortly after she was abducted, Cameron presented Colleen with a contract, a formal, typed slave contract. He made her sign it. He renamed her Kay, told her she had no rights, no identity. But again, she survived. At one point, Cameron handed Colleen a gun. She didn't know if it was loaded or not, and he told her, "This is to see if you'll do what I say," telling her to put the gun in her mouth and pull the trigger. She did. Nearly 4 years after he abducted her, Cameron did the unthinkable. He brought Colleen to visit her family. Yes, he took her home, and he left her there, overnight. But Colleen didn't say a word. She didn't run, she didn't whisper a single cry for help, because in her mind, the cost was too high. She believed with every fiber of her being that if she spoke, the Company would kill them all. That's what Cameron had told her, that if she so much as opened her mouth, men from the Company would storm the house. They'd kill her parents, kill her, kill anyone inside. No questions, no mercy. So she stayed silent. Colleen's parents were relieved to see her, and confused. She looked thinner, withdrawn, nervous. But there she was. Cameron told them she was his fiancée, and they believed it. At least enough to take a photo of the two of them, smiling like a couple in love. But something wasn't right. She didn't have any money. She barely spoke. Her family started to suspect she might be in some kind of a cult. Still, they didn't press. They were afraid that pushing her might scare her off, that if they said the wrong thing, they'd never see her again. And Colleen, well, she played along, smiled for the camera, told them she was fine, because she believed it was the only way to keep them safe. That's how trauma works. That's how coercive control operates. doesn't always look like a cage. Sometimes it looks like obedience. Sometimes it looks like silence. But Colleen was watching, learning, waiting. She knew that panic wouldn't save her, but patience might. By 1983, Cameron began losing his grip, not on Colleen, but on Janice. His wife, now overwhelmed by jealousy, guilt, and religious conflict, began to pull away from the life they had created. And in August of 1984, Janice told Colleen the truth. There was no company. There never had been. The terror collapsed like a house of cards. Colleen broke down, but she didn't scream. She didn't attack. The two women left, and Janice took her to her own parents' home, where Colleen picked up the phone, called her father, and quietly boarded a bus home. 7 years. 7 unthinkable years. And she walked out of that house alive. By the time Colleen was finally free, her identity had been buried under 7 years of torture, manipulation, and psychological control. She didn't run to the police. She didn't scream. She didn't speak. Because Cameron had conditioned her, trained her like a soldier under siege. Rape, sensory deprivation, starvation, physical and psychological torment. It had all been orchestrated to break her down until obedience was automatic. And it worked. Even after she escaped, Colleen stayed quiet. At Janice's request, she gave Cameron time. Time to reform. But in a stunning twist, it was Janice, not Colleen, who walked into a police station in November of that same year. She was the one who turned him in. She told authorities everything. That her husband had kidnapped and held Colleen captive for 7 years. That he had tortured and raped her again and again. And more chilling still, Janice told them Colleen wasn't the first. There had been another woman, Marie Elizabeth Spinacki. Janice said Cameron had abducted her in 1976, just a year before Colleen, and that he had killed her. But Marie's body was never found. No physical evidence, no remains. And so, despite the horrific allegations, Cameron was never charged with Marie's murder. Instead, he was charged with 8 felony counts, including kidnapping, rape, sodomy, and forced oral copulation. In exchange for full immunity, Janice agreed to testify against her husband and against the abuse he had inflicted on her, too. And Colleen, well, she testified as well. With unshakable courage, she stood before a jury and spoke the truth. She walked them through the years of horror, the details of her captivity, and the endless mind games. While Cameron's defense team tried to twist it, they pointed to her compliance, arguing that it proved she chose to stay, that the sex wasn't rape because she hadn't fought back. They even brought in a psychiatrist who compared Cameron's tactics to military training, like it was something a Marine might go through. But the judge wasn't having it. He stopped the testimony cold. This wasn't boot camp. Colleen wasn't a soldier. She was a prisoner, and she had never consented. Cameron himself took the stand. He tried to paint a picture of twisted romance, claimed that Colleen had fallen in love with him, that she stayed willingly, that it had all been consensual. But the jury didn't buy it. They found him guilty on 7 of the 8 counts related to Colleen's kidnapping and rape. At sentencing, the judge did not hold back. He called Cameron Hooker the most dangerous psychopath I've ever dealt with, and he handed down a sentence of 104 years in prison. It was a trial unlike anything California had ever seen. The nature of the case, the psychological bondage, the duration, the sheer horror of it was unprecedented. The judge even thanked the jury for enduring the emotional weight of what they'd heard, because Colleen's testimony, her truth, had left a mark on the courtroom. And for the first time in nearly a decade, the world finally knew what she had survived.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law.
The trial was over. Cameron Hooker, the man who had stolen 7 years of Colleen's life, was finally behind bars. But freedom, real freedom, doesn't come all at once, not even with a guilty verdict. For Colleen, the end of the trial was only the beginning. The beginning of how to live again, how to breathe without fear. She had spent nearly a decade in a box. Not just the wooden coffin under the Hooker's bed, but the invisible box he'd built around her mind. A prison of control, obedience, and terror. Now she had to learn how to be Colleen again. And that wasn't easy. In the years that followed, Colleen faced an uphill battle. One that didn't come with news headlines or courtroom victories. This was the quiet work, the private work, the messy, painful journey of healing. The healing wasn't linear. It never is. Colleen faced setbacks. There were quiet battles. There were memories that clawed their way to the surface. Still, she carried on, finding her strength in her faith and the support of her community. She returned to her hometown of Riverside, California, and eventually settled in the Red Bluff area, just miles from where she had once been held captive. Some might wonder why she stayed so close. But maybe, for Colleen, staying was a form of reclaiming, of proving that he no longer had power over her. The town where she was once hidden in a box could now be the place she lived freely, as herself. And she began to rebuild, piece by piece. She took her life back. She took a job as a secretary, pursued an accounting degree, and focused on creating a sense of normalcy. She married, became a mother, and later a grandmother. Each of these milestones was a testament to her resilience and determination to live a full life, despite the horrors that she had endured. She didn't let what happened define her. She defined herself. In time, Colleen began to speak out about what happened to her, not because she wanted attention, but because she knew her story could help others. She started working as a counselor at a women's shelter, offering support to those who had experienced abuse and control. Her firsthand experience allowed her to connect deeply with other survivors, providing them with hope and understanding. She never saw herself as a hero, but to women everywhere, she was and is. She began giving interviews, appearing in documentaries, and speaking at events for survivors of violence and abuse. She chose to use her trauma to help others. One of the most remarkable things about Colleen is that she never let Cameron own her story. She took it back, rewrote the ending, and in doing so, became a voice for people who are still trapped, whether in a house, in a relationship, or their own silence. In one interview, she said, "I want people to know they can go through something that terrible, and they can come out on the other side." People often ask her, "What got you through?" Her answer is always the same: faith, hope, and love. Faith that there was something greater than what she was going through. Hope that there was a future beyond the box. And love for her family, for the people she had lost, and for the person she was determined to become. She explained that she would mentally escape her confinement by focusing on happy memories of her family and friends, learning that she could go anywhere in her mind. Colleen's story has been featured in books, documentaries, and films, including the Lifetime movie Girl in the Box and the documentary Snapped Notorious, Girl in the Box. Through these platforms, she has reached a wider audience, raising awareness about the complexities of captivity and the resilience of the human spirit. Today, Colleen continues to live in Northern California, cherishing her freedom and the life she has built. Every year, on August 10th, the day she escaped, she and her family celebrate her liberation. A poignant reminder of her journey from victim to survivor to advocate. Colleen's story is not just one of survival. It's a powerful testament to the strength of the human spirit and the capacity to heal and help others. Through her advocacy and resilience, she has become a beacon of hope for countless individuals facing their own battles, proving that even in the darkest of times, there's a path to light and freedom. Colleen's story is one of the most harrowing accounts of captivity and control ever documented. But it's also one of the most powerful stories of survival. She was taken, hidden, and broken down piece by piece. She endured years inside a box, forced into silence and submission under the weight of fear, threats, and unspeakable violence. Despite all of that, Colleen Stan emerged from that darkness not just alive, but awake. Her freedom didn't come in a dramatic escape. It came slowly, quietly, and through the unimaginable bravery of deciding to live every day in spite of what had been done to her. Colleen chose not to disappear into her trauma. Instead, she used it. She became a counselor, an advocate, a mother, a grandmother, a voice for other survivors. She chose to share her truth so that others might understand the manipulation, the fear, and the psychological warfare that kept her trapped. Her life is not defined by what Cameron Hooker did to her. It's defined by what she did next. She took back her narrative. She helped others find theirs. She turned pain into purpose. Colleen is not just a survivor of one of the most disturbing crimes in modern American history. She's a woman who reminds us that even in our most broken moments, we are never beyond repair. We heal, we rise, we speak. And because of people like Colleen, we learn. You are wanted, you are loved, and you are not alone in this.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.